The Sweden-Denmark power cable story is a small item by score, just 15 points, but the underlying issue is significant for European energy policy. Sweden has paused a proposed interconnector cable to Denmark, citing EU grid rules around capacity allocation and cross-border power flow balancing. This matters because Nordic energy integration has been one of the smoother examples of cross-border grid cooperation in Europe, and a bilateral dispute over cable infrastructure introduces friction into a system that's been generally working.
The technical context here is that interconnectors between Nordic countries serve multiple purposes. They let countries balance load across different generation mixes, enable renewable energy sharing, and provide redundancy during generation shortfalls. Denmark has high wind penetration. Sweden has significant hydro and nuclear. They're naturally complementary. A dispute that delays or blocks a planned cable affects both countries' ability to manage their respective grids efficiently and has downstream implications for electricity prices.
The EU grid rules angle is interesting because it reflects a broader tension in European energy governance. The EU wants more interconnection and more cross-border energy trading, but the rules around how cross-border capacity is allocated and priced can create perverse incentives where national grid operators find it financially rational to restrict cross-border flows even when they're technically feasible. Sweden's position here seems to be that the proposed cable's terms don't work under current EU market rules, which is a regulatory design problem as much as a bilateral political one.
The flow battery chemistry question is a fascinating niche topic that scored only 5 points, but represents the kind of deep technical discussion that makes HN worth reading. The Post asks why there are no flow batteries using symmetric ferrocyanide electrolytes, meaning the same chemistry on both the positive and negative sides of the cell. The answer, from what I can piece together from the discussion, involves a combination of thermodynamic constraints around the voltage window you can access with symmetric chemistry, and engineering challenges around membrane selectivity when both sides are chemically identical.
The Open Battery Information Project on GitHub is adjacent to this, a community effort to catalog battery specifications, performance data, and degradation characteristics in a standardized open format. Score of 18, 8 comments, but it's the kind of infrastructure project that compounds in value as it grows. Electric vehicle owners, battery researchers, and grid storage engineers all benefit from having accessible, standardized battery data.
The small nuclear reactors piece from IEEE Spectrum, originally from 2015, resurfaced today, is worth noting because the history it covers of small modular reactor development has direct relevance to current SMR commercialization efforts. The pattern of early promise, regulatory complexity, and project cancellation that characterized the 1950s and 1960s experiments with small reactors is one that current developers cite specifically as a cautionary tale.
The true rate of unemployment story from LISEP scored 249 with 218 comments, and it's one of those topics where the HN community brings genuine analytical value because many of the commenters are economists or data scientists who engage seriously with measurement methodology. The Bureau of Labor Statistics' official unemployment figures, currently around 3-4% depending on the month, are constructed using specific definitional choices about who counts as unemployed. LISEP, true rate of unemployment, uses broader definitions that include people who are underemployed or who have dropped out of the labor force.
The HN Matchmaker project is a neat community tool. It tries to algorithmically match the who wants to be hired posts with the who's hiring posts in HN's monthly threads. Score of 96, 41 comments. The monthly hiring threads are genuinely useful but unwieldy at scale, and any tool that makes matching more systematic adds real value.
Now I want to stay on the labor and unemployment thread for our what if we're wrong discussion, because there's a claim that's been circulating with increasing confidence in the HN community and in broader tech discourse, that AI tools are not yet causing meaningful labor displacement in white-collar work, and that the productivity gains from current AI adoption are being absorbed as increased output rather than headcount reduction. The argument goes that if AI were genuinely displacing knowledge workers, we'd see it in the unemployment data, and we don't.
I want to challenge that confidently stated conclusion, because I think the LISEP discussion actually reveals why it might be wrong. If you use the standard BLS unemployment rate, you're looking at a metric that was designed to measure cyclical unemployment. People who want full-time work, are available, and have actively searched in the last 4 weeks. That definition systematically undercounts structural displacement, because workers who have left the labor force, shifted to gig work, or are underemployed relative to their skills don't show up as unemployed.
So the argument would be AI-driven labor displacement might already be happening, but it's showing up as labor force dropout, gig work migration, and wage pressure rather than headline unemployment figures.
Exactly. And there's a parallel from automation in manufacturing. When robots displaced assembly line workers in the 1980s and 1990s, the headline unemployment rate didn't necessarily spike dramatically, because many displaced workers stopped looking for work or found lower quality employment, rather than remaining in the unemployment pool long enough to register. The pain was real, but the metric didn't capture it cleanly.
The strongest counterargument, the one I'd use to defend the AI isn't displacing yet claim, is that we're still in a period where AI tools primarily augment rather than replace. A junior programmer using Claude Fable 5.1 produces more output, they're not replaced. A legal researcher using an LLM processes more documents, the firm doesn't reduce headcount, it competes for more clients. The net effect is productivity gain distributed across existing workers, not replacement.
That's a coherent story, and it might be the right one. But here's what I'd watch for if it's wrong. If AI displacement is happening but being masked by measurement, you'd expect to see a divergence between labor force participation rates for high education cohorts and their historical trend, particularly in information work occupations. You'd look at the LICEP true rate figures and ask whether knowledge workers specifically are showing up as discouraged or underemployed at rates that exceed historical norms. And you check whether wage growth in previously AI-adjacent occupations, coding, writing, paralegal work, is decelerating relative to comparable non-AI exposed work.
Those are empirically checkable signals. I'd add one more. If the major enterprises deploying AI at scale, the hyperscalers, the large legal firms, the financial institutions, start reporting headcount reductions in specific job categories that correlate with AI deployment timelines, that would be hard to explain away as anything other than displacement. We haven't seen that pattern clearly yet, but the LICEP methodology debate is a useful reminder that absence of evidence in a flawed measurement system is not the same thing as evidence of absence.
Insurance claims adjusters apparently hate AI tools being deployed in their workflow, and their reasons are instructive. Not because the tools can't help with straightforward claims, but because the edge cases, the contested claims, the human judgment calls that require contextual understanding, those are exactly the situations where current AI fails in ways that create legal. This is also where I think the insurance claims adjuster story is worth noting. It's a Wired piece that scored 25 with only 2 comments, which undersells the substantive question it raises. And ethical liability. The adjusters who hate AI aren't Luddites. They're domain experts who have accurate mental models of where the technology breaks.
That's a pattern worth paying attention to across many industries. The workers most hostile to AI adoption in their domain are often the ones with the deepest understanding of the failure modes the tools produce.